You're listening to the Stage and Story Podcast, a show about story, culture, and the Christian imagination. I'm your host, Dane Bundy, president of Stage and Story and secondary principal at Providence Academy in Johnson City, Tennessee. This Saturday, or actually would have been last Saturday, I visited a place I hadn't been in a while, the movie theaters. At 40% capacity, with all the expected safety measures, AMC opened its doors to me. Well, I guess Johnson City as well. With Christopher Nolan's new film Tenet releasing last weekend, I was not going to miss it. Lines out the door? No problem. I'll camp out. Soft drinks and popcorn that require a mortgage? Not a problem. I'll sell my car. Listen, this is a Christopher Nolan film, people. Yep. Never heard of him? Oh, I don't know. The Dark Knight Trilogy, 2005, 2008, 2012. The Prestige, 2006. Inception, 2010. Interstellar, 2014. And now, Tenet. It's the story of one man, played by Denzel Washington's son, actually, fighting to save the world. The enemy? Time. His weapon? One word. Tenet. Not following? That's okay. The movie's going to explain it all. This is Christopher Nolan, for goodness sakes, and he has 2 hours and 30 minutes to do so. Now, I reached the theater at around 12:25 p.m. Ticket on my phone, mask on my face. I swung open the doors, bracing myself for the hum of my imagination-starved Johnson City people and their loud welcome I was going to receive. I considered making a scene, utilizing my improv skills and massive movie trivia mind, you know, like yelling, "Leonardo DiCaprio's totem top never fell." Bam. That'd get the party started. I'm glad I didn't. Because when I passed the threshold and my eyes adjusted, I didn't see anyone. Everyone must already be in the theater. So I decided to skip the concessions. I didn't want to miss any of the previews. And as I walked down the hallway again, strange. They were deserted. It was too weird, actually, not to take pictures. So I paused and I took some pictures on my phone. I arrived at theater number 6 and opened the doors. And I took a tally of everyone in there. It took me a few minutes. 1, 2, 3, 4. Strange. 4 people. I found my seat, sat down, and reclined as far back as I could. I glanced over to the 2 people across the aisle, 50% of the attendance, and was shocked that they weren't wearing their masks. So rude. Oh, wait. They were just eating popcorn. They're all good. Finally, the movie started, and the opening scene didn't disappoint. It was strange, though. The setting was an opera house, literally packed with people. In every seat, no social distancing and no masks. Oh, wait, here we go. Except for the men with guns, they had gas masks and were sprinting down the aisles. And then the scene ended. Not sure what was going on there, but Nolan will probably tell us. Now, I'm going to skip ahead just a little bit in my story, like 2 hours and 23 minutes ahead, and go right to the moment when I was exiting the theater. Is it just me, or did Nolan forget to tell us what was going on here? Well, ultimately, I enjoyed the film, the entire experience, but a number of things did stand out to me in the film, and I'm going to go ahead and list a few of them. Let's first start on some first reactions to the craft or the quality of the film. Something was off with the score or the music in the film. Hans Zimmer can't win them all, right? Oh, wait. Zimmer didn't score this film. I heard that he went off to go score the new film Dune. That's probably why. The acting in the movie was fine. Okay, well, actually, it was a little disappointing. Even Michael Caine's 3-minute cameo was off for some reason. And the strongest acting by far came from Kenneth Branagh, who played the Russian villain. Boy, he plays Monster really well. Now, maybe I'm being too hard on the actors, but here's the thing. I could not understand the vast majority of what they were saying. Now, and I'm not exaggerating here because I never exaggerate, but I could not decipher around 40 or 50% of the actors' dialogue. Is this a new technique? Like that shaky camera thing that was really popular about 10 years ago? Or was it just my theater sound? Or maybe it was a COVID safety measure. Don't want to spread COVID, so make sure that no one could hear the actors talk on screen. Now, a little update. After I posted this review, I had a number of people kind of reach out to me and say, hey, I didn't have that problem hearing the dialogue, so maybe it was just your theater. So I'm going to go see the film again, and maybe it was just the theater and not the actors or the filmmakers. But I'm going to continue. I wasn't able to understand the dialogue, and when you realize that character development often takes place through dialogue, you can understand why I felt that the story was all plot and no characters. I truly had little to no connection with the hero, literally named protagonist, or any of the characters around him. Plot was heady and intriguing, but ultimately it felt empty. What I thought would be the most engaging sequences, all right, spoiler alert, fighting and driving through time backwards, called inversion, were actually the least engaging. It's almost like all the cues, those sound and visual cues that make an action sequence enthralling, were absent because everything was backwards. So the action sequences felt unsatisfying. Let's now talk about some first reactions on the worldview behind this film. But spoiler alert, I'm going to reveal some important plot points of Tenet and some of Nolan's other films. So here we go. I'm not sure what to do with the idea that protagonist, played by John David Washington, was actually the creator of the entire Tenet mission from the beginning of the film. Brilliant? Or just really confusing? Well, to say the least, this made protagonist's relationship with Neil unique as well, because protagonist had recruited him in the future. By the time we arrive at the end of the film, Neil, played by Robert Pattinson, admits that he's known protagonist for a long time. Actually, this is the end of a great friendship, he says. So here we go. Nolan is mixing up time like he does in a lot of his films. For protagonist, this then is only the beginning of his and Neil's friendship. And unfortunately, although we spent over 2 hours with Neil, I didn't feel like I knew him either. I understand where you're coming from, protagonist. In this cryptic denouement scene, there's also some philosophical investigation, not surprising, going on here about how they prevented World War III. We learn that it was Neil, masked as a member of the Blue Team, who sacrificed himself by taking the bullet for protagonist. And while it was a little confusing, I did think that sacrificial scene was pretty neat. Now, before Neil sets off to make sure the ending goes as it's supposed to, Neil makes some important declarations about what's going on in this world. Neil states, "What's happened, happened." Now, this mantra, of course, stirs the question of free will and the importance of making choices. And this is something that the film anticipates, because protagonist, you can see, he's going, huh? What about the ability to make choices? Neil continues, and so I'm going to give you the entire quote. Neil says, "What happened, happened," which is an expression of faith in the mechanics of the world. It's not an excuse to do nothing. So everything is fated, but we should still do something. Why? Well, don't worry. It's a matter of faith in the universe. Okay, are you a little lost too? Well, maybe the answer comes from the protagonist's guide, the brilliant physicist played by Clemens Poesi. I think that's how you say it. This is at the beginning of the film when protagonist is first trying to understand what is going on with inversion. And this is what she tells him. Don't try to understand it. Feel it. Don't try to understand it. Feel it. Okay, I'm not sure that helps. Well, in terms of worldview and real life application, this film might serve as a metaphor warning us about a coming ecological crisis such as global warming. Maybe. It seems like that might be something what Nolan is trying to do in his film Interstellar. Maybe he's continuing that line of argument. But following this line of thinking that an ecological crisis is coming about, and Nolan in this film is trying to speak about that, we might argue that this crisis is then inevitable, referring back to Neil's line, "What's happened, happened." But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try and work towards fixing it. Again, Neil's line, "It's not an excuse to do nothing." So faith in the world, or how the world works, must play a role in our activism. But let me ask you this. What is faith in this context? I think definitions really matter here. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not terribly sure. But whatever it is, faith, seems to act on the level of intuition and not rationality. Ultimately, I ask myself this: who is the savior we're to look for to rescue us from this fated disaster of the world? Well, the film seems to say nothing outside of us. We, humanity, can be the savior if we want to. Now, this is a form of secular humanism. Now, I'm open to the argument that I'm reading too much into this movie that's not there, but I seem to remember the same type of humanism in Nolan's Interstellar, made in 2014. And I did just go back and rewatch it, and it did confirm the observations that I'm about to offer. Now, if you remember, okay, warning, big spoiler here. If you haven't seen Interstellar, go and watch it right now. So, if you remember, in Interstellar, humanity was staring at the extinction of the human species and the world in this story as well. So Cooper, played by Matthew McConaughey, and his team, including Anne Hathaway, blast their way to space to save the human species. And at one point, deep in space, a mystical hand reaches out to them, specifically Anne Hathaway, and makes you think, is that God? Or is that a supernatural power? Maybe. And we did also see signs of what seemed to be supernatural things going on in Cooper's bookshelf all throughout the film with 10-year-old Murph. Or did we? Well, as the climax of Interstellar takes place, again, big spoiler alert, we come to realize that there is no supernatural world. The mystical appearances were actually Cooper, or Matthew McConaughey. He had found his way into a wormhole and was simply communicating back to himself and others from a different dimension. So, who is the savior in Interstellar? Humanity. They had it in them the whole time, because it was him, Cooper, the whole time. From what I can decipher, this is humanism in a materialist world. Now, I want you to notice how this is quite a departure from other sci-fi fantasy films like Steven Spielberg's Close Encounters of the Third Kind, released in 1977, in which space is occupied by supernatural beings. These aliens are not only friendly, but prove to be saviors for humanity, or at least for Roy Neary, the lead character. Now, there's a lot of problems with this film as well, and you can read my review of this film on the Stage and Story website, but my point is this. I don't cite this to defend the existence of aliens, but to point out that Spielberg's universe accounts for the supernatural world, whereas Nolan's does not. Nolan's world is a material cosmos. In other words, the material is all that exists. There is no supernatural aspect to the world, except maybe for this mystical understanding of love. But that's it. And that's at least what I can piece together. So I return to Tenet. Humanism, materialism, these philosophical underpinnings are not new to Nolan, certainly, but they are problematic. And I think as Christians, we should be thinking through these philosophical worldviews that are being propelled through these movies. For if the material world is all that exists, and the world is fated to destruction in some way by some force, maybe just human beings, and the real protagonist savior is humankind, well then, friends, we are doomed. And sorry, Neil, I don't see why we should work towards fixing things if everything that, quote, happened, happened. And I'm sorry, but, quote, don't try to understand it, just feel it, doesn't give me a reason to leap over that logical cliff. If I'm going to have faith in something, it's not going to be an impersonal, irrational, ultimately material universe, or the human species, but the eternal, wise, all-powerful God. Indeed, he has already acted in time and space, defeating death and evil once and for all. We might say that, yes, he has already stopped the logarithm. In conclusion, Tenet felt cold, almost like trying to interact with human beings through a Zoom meeting in a COVID pandemic. Now, don't misunderstand me. I enjoyed myself at the theater very much, and I still think Christopher Nolan is a powerful filmmaker. But Tenet fell short of my expectations. But look, that's okay. Many of his other films wildly exceeded them. So I'll probably see this movie again, especially after talking with some of my friends and students who have seen it, if not only to understand what I did not understand, which was actually quite a bit. And look, when I return to the theater, maybe I'll see you there. Not through a screen, but live and in person. Look for me. I'll be in a mask. Well, this closes our time for the Stage and Story Podcast. I'm Dane Bundy, your host. Thank you so much for listening today, and just want to encourage you to check out our website, stageandstory.org, for more resources on cultivating the Christian imagination. Now, may Christ be the center of all our thinking and imagining. See you next time.